Our next case, which is Stephan v. Donahoe, or Donahue. Ms. Lewison?
May it please the Court, my name is Brenda Lewison and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Craig Stephan. Craig Stephan has brought this case alleging that he was discharged because he was regarded as an individual with a disability. The primary point that I wish to make to you is that the person who effected his discharge, who actually made his removal from the USPS was an Emma Hughes. And the point that I want to make about Emma Hughes is that she's a labor relations specialist. She had been a labor relations specialist for 8 years. She was not the janitor. She was not
the what?
She was not the janitor. She was not a cafe worker. She was not somehow unfamiliar with the language and the law related to labor and employment issues.
Was the person asking the questions familiar with all this?
Pardon?
Person asking her questions familiar with all this?
I was.
You asked the question.
I asked the question.
And in each question, you used the word disability.
I did.
Now, I understand, is there a stipulation or is there some other finding that he is not disabled?
We have a stipulation that we're not going to bring that claim, correct?
Okay, then how come you keep using the word disability if you know he's not disabled?
Because what I'm doing is I'm getting to her intent, her recognition, what
she
believes.
No, she's just repeating the word after three questions that you used.
She agreed that he was somebody who had a disability.
But you used the word disability. You must be presuming he has a disability, and I know that isn't the case.
I am presuming that she believes that he has a disability. And that is precisely what I believe she did. She knew that he had been off work for a year and a half before she, before he was ultimately removed, or initially removed. That's more accurate.
They didn't even know he was gone for about 6 weeks.
No, 6 months they didn't understand why he was gone. They were claiming that he was AWOL, but he had been gone for over a year by the time that they finally figured out that he was quote-unquote AWOL. And it was May of 2003 that he originally went out on his work injury. July 2003, he came back for a week. November 2004, the new supervisor said, "Where is this guy?" And so started writing him letters. But she knew when she negotiated the settlement agreement related to the grievance arbitration over his discharge, she knew in 2005 that he'd been out of work for a year and a half before this whole removal process started. She also knew that he had a bad back. And she knew that there was an allegation that it was a work-related injury, but that there had not actually been a finding according to whether or not there was work-related injury.
Why didn't he ever say anything?
Why didn't he ever say anything?
Was he relying on his union rep and just said let him handle it and didn't respond?
I'm not sure that this is part of the record, so I just want to put the court on notice.
The record we have says he didn't respond.
Right. He called in every single week. And he called in every single week. After he started to get letters, he continued to call in every single week. Why they believed that he wasn't being responsive, he was not actually providing the information directly to this new supervisor. He had provided information to his old supervisor.
How do you call in? Who's he calling?
There was some phone number that he was supposed to call in when it was an unexpected injury. And because the original injury was an unexpected injury or illness, that's the telephone number that he continued to call in every single week.
Did somebody answer?
It's no. It's
one of these things where you get
coded,
a recording?
Excuse me.
A recording?
It's some sort of recording. You get a confirmation number. He's got a list of these confirmation numbers, and he was calling in every single week. Why the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, we don't know. That is not part of the record. What we do know is that he was sent these letters by his supervisor. He did get the letters. He absolutely did get the letters. He gave his medical records to his union. Had he had different advice at that point, maybe he should have given them directly to the unemployment, USPS
union
supervisor.
Union guy said he dropped the ball, I guess. Right?
Well, that's what Mr. Stephan maintains, yes, and believes. And apparently, that's what his union rep informed him. What we do know is that at some point or another, there was this negotiated agreement. It was written by Ms. Hughes. She was the person who put in the language full duty, which meant that even though she knew that he'd been ill for at least a year and a half and out for another year past that year and a half illness, even though she knew that, she required him to come back without any restrictions. And that, given her background, given her knowledge of his medical conditions, was, we believe, a violation of the law. When he couldn't meet those conditions, that he come back full duty, without restrictions, he got fired. We believe that the requirement that he come back full duty without restrictions is a per se violation of the act. And because she knew and she understood when she wrote that document that he had a disability, that was her belief, her understanding at the time.
Based on the three questions you asked?
Based on those three questions and the information that she had regarding his physical condition that she gleaned from his union representative prior to writing the settlement agreement.
What did the union rep say?
The union rep said he had a back injury and that he'd been out because of his back injury.
And this was this a part of a grievance procedure? Or?
Correct. There was a grievance arbitration related to the discharge and this settlement
this
agreement.
This is after the discharge, apparently.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's after the initial removal, but before the effective discharge. The effective discharge was either December of 2005 or January of 2006. The initial removal over which there was a grievance arbitration was made at the end.
So what made her think that he was just totally disabled, whatever is required by them?
What made her think that? First of all, the fact that he'd been out of work for a year and a half. Second of all, that the union rep had informed her and she believed that he had a back injury.
Well, that being told that someone has a back injury is not equivalent to being told he's totally disabled.
But she was willing to say that he was disabled, and she understands.
Well, that's the answer to your questions. It's not clear she's using that in a legal sense.
I would maintain, and do in the briefs, that inference is really left to a jury or whatever fact finder we have. That is an inference where the reasonable inference at summary judgment should be made in favor of the non-moving party, in this case, Mr. Stephan. If, at trial, the fact finder finds that, in fact, she didn't mean disability in the terms and in the meaning that it's required by the law, that's a different matter. But that inference, that reasonable inference, given her background, her training, her understanding of his medical condition, and what she knew when she wrote that document that ultimately prevented him from returning to work, I believe that that means that this matter should go before a fact finder and ought not be dismissed at summary judgment. It's a reasonable inference. I'd like to save my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you, Ms. Lewison.
Thank you.
Mr. Alexander.
May it please the Court, my name is Keith Alexander and I represent the United States. The plaintiff here simply failed to present evidence that he was a qualified individual under the Rehabilitation Act. One is a qualified individual under the Act by either actually being substantially limited in a major life activity or being regarded as such by his employer. Here, the plaintiff is claiming that Emma Hughes at the Postal Service regarded him as being limited in a major life activity without identifying what major life activity she thought he was unable to perform or was limited in being able to perform.
What did they stipulate? They stipulated he was not disabled or something?
Excuse me?
Or he's not going to pursue this? Obviously, the question is, he a qualified person with a disability? I guess that's sort of the threshold here. But they're not asserting that, I understand. It's whatever the post office perceived or thought or something that they regarded him as disabled. And so when you're saying they have no indication of what his disability was or why he couldn't work or what is it you're saying they didn't have? Because it seems to me you're going past that. It seems to me they already admitted he's not a qualified person with a disability.
That's correct, Your Honor, that there was a stipulation that the plaintiff would not assert that he actually was limited in major life activity, or that he actually was disabled. What the claim is that Emma Hughes at the Postal Service thought that he was. And
what supposedly did she think was his disability?
She testified at the deposition that she knew from the union steward at the time that she entered into the settlement agreement what the union steward told her, which was he had some sort of back injury. She explicitly states in the deposition that she did not know the seriousness of it. She explicitly states in the deposition that the union steward even told her that he might be able to return back to full duty without restrictions. And so that's what her impression was at the time that they entered into the settlement agreement. Now later, after the settlement agreement was executed, Mr. Stephan had seen two physicians who indicated that he had some limitations, that he wasn't able to lift or pull or push more than 25 pounds, that he would be limited in his ability to twist and turn and that type of thing, and that he would be able to return to work with restrictions. Would be able to return to work with restrictions. Then the Postal Service's health unit, looked at him, examined him, and determined that he was not able to return to work full duty per the settlement agreement. And the understanding was full duty meant without restrictions. So the most that the evidence shows that Ms. Hughes knew at the end of the day was that he was limited, that he wasn't able to carry more than 25 pounds, and he had these restrictions. But as the Supreme Court has stated in Sutton, and as this Court has stated several times subsequent to Sutton, knowing about a limitation is not enough. The plaintiff has to present evidence that the employer knew that he was unable to perform or substantially limited in performing a major life activity and identify that major life activity. The plaintiff doesn't identify the major life activity because there's none in the evidence. Now, Judge Goodstein, in his opinion, presumes that perhaps a major life activity here is working, that he's substantially limited in the ability to work. And as Judge Goodstein accurately pointed out, in order to prove that, he has to show that he's unable to perform a broad range of jobs, or that Ms. Hughes thought that he was unable to perform a broad range of jobs. And that's nothing in the evidence of the sort. There's nothing of the sort.
Was he full-time before his first injury?
He was a part-time mail
handler.
That's
what I thought. What does that mean?
I don't know exactly the number of hours, but I think it's around 20 to 30 hours.
So when you talk about full duty, as far as he's concerned, full duty is 20 or 30 hours. Well, at least if he's going to return to full duty, if that's what full duty is. Would he be expected to do more than he did before his first injury?
Well, he thought full duty meant returning to work as he had been, part-time, and his understanding was with restrictions. That's what he said. Ms. Hughes thought it was full duty without restrictions. But But the critical question here is, what did Ms. Hughes think about his condition? And specifically, what major life activity wasn't he unable to perform or was substantially limited in being able to perform? And there's nothing of the sort on the record of what major life activity we're talking about. The only point in the record that the plaintiff points to is the questioning in the deposition testimony, which was a one-word answer to a compound question. And as Judge Goodstein correctly analyzed in his opinion, if you look at the context of that conversation at the deposition, the real inquiry there is whether she thought that he sustained the injury on the job or off the job. If you want to know what she thought the extent of his injury was, look a few pages early in the deposition transcript, pages 8 and 9. That's where she says that the union steward told her he had some sort of back injury, but she didn't know the seriousness of it. The union steward said that he might be able to return to work full duty, and that's where you look to. So because there wasn't any evidence on the record indicating that she thought he was unable to perform a major life activity, Judge Goodstein properly granted the defendant's motion for summary judgment. And unless the court has any other further questions, I would respectfully request the court to affirm that decision.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ellington.
Thank you.
Ms. Lewison, how much time does she have? 1 minute? Further?
As to the number of hours that Mr. Steffen worked, I believe it was from 5 in the evening until 11 o'clock at night. He was a mail handler, which means that he ordinarily might be required to lift very heavy mail buckets, and you move it from here into a bin or things of that nature. He had been receiving accommodations prior to this time that he went out on a workplace injury in May of 2003, so that he no longer had to lift some of the heavier objects.
This is before his injury?
Correct.
So he already had what we call it, limited duty or something?
Correct. The accommodations were those which he expected to receive once he went back to work. And that's wherein we had a lack of meeting of the minds, shall we say, when it comes to what the meaning of this settlement agreement was. Because full duty, as Mr. Steffen understood it, was that he would return to his job as he had been performing it prior to the time that he left in May of 2003. Ms. Hughes believed that full duty meant that he would come back without the need for any restrictions or accommodations of any kind. And so that's why the doctor, Dr. Buono, on the 2485 said he didn't fulfill the settlement agreement, and so therefore he's gone. And then Ms. Hughes read the doctor's report, which indicated all sorts of information about sitting, standing, lifting, pulling, and that sort of thing, and then discharged Mr. Steffen. So she actually did have information about his physical condition at the time immediately prior to the discharge.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Lewison and Mr. Alexander. Our next case.